Hi, Rory. Thanks for joining us today. Please could you tell us a bit about your role at the V&A and how you got involved in smart cities?
Yeah, my title here is Curator of Contemporary Architecture and Urbanism, and I'm sitting in part of the Design, Architecture and Digital Department at the V&A. So we're a collecting department, so we're working on the National Collection of Architecture and Urbanism. And as part of that, part of our research looks into smart cities, of course, a hugely important development in understanding our cities and how citizens are hosted and managed and what opportunities they can have through digital technologies and where that intersects with public space.
Thanks, Rory. So I read your article, which was in The Guardian, the sci-fi future of lampposts. I was really interested in that topic. So how do you think the development of street lighting has changed how people use cities over time?
Yeah, what drew me to write that article really was discovering in our collections, in our medieval and Renaissance galleries, a very old form of street lighting from Italy from the 16th century, so around 1550. And it's a very primitive kind of metal cage, if you like, where they would coil up rope soaked in oil, set it on fire, and then it would be attached to a wall outside a palace, for instance. And as far as we know, that's the first example of street lighting for public spaces. So in about 500 years, what's really changed was kind of the question that I was trying to ask through that article. And really the underlying question is, who are these technologies for and what purposes do they serve? So already from that first example, it was about providing safety and security outside a palace, but also about, it kind of extending the private space into the public space in front of that building. But really, street lighting begins around 1700 when a more efficient form of gas lighting is developed, and then that's adopted widely across Europe in the 18th century. And then, of course, with gas and electric, it just kind of builds and builds. And really, we're at this point now where obviously street lighting is becoming both a kind of cost or a burden on councils. One figure I discovered suggested that up to 70% of a city's electricity use is directed towards street lighting. So, of course, cities are trying to find ways of doing that much cheaper. But also they're asking, what other purposes can we have? What are the social effects of street lighting? And perhaps what are the effects of some of the tactics that we're using to save money on lighting? So I guess one of the great breakthroughs more recently in the last few decades, of course, is LED lighting, extremely low heat, extremely low energy, and cities can save a lot of power by switching to LEDs. But also the rise of smart lighting. So once we combine lighting with systems like sensors, which can detect movement, so a light might be very dimmed when no one's walking near it, and then it can go much brighter when people are walking under it. Seems to make perfect sensible sense. But even more than that, we can start to combine other sorts of sensors, like sensors that can pick up data. So they might look at the signals coming out of your mobile phone or the type of traffic that's going across a data network. And what can we learn then about our citizens from information like this that we're kind of scooping up from the air? And I think these types of developments pose they offer opportunities for, being very specific and customizable and responding to people's needs. But they also open up a tricky field of privacy and questions about data security, particularly, I think, in a public space where it's very difficult to get users or pedestrians' consent as to what's happening with their data or who's using it and for what purposes.
Okay, that's really fascinating. It's really fascinating to hear about how street lighting develops over time and how you think these new forms of smart street lighting are impacting on people. I've got a couple of questions. So thinking back to the past, the changes in street lighting in those early centuries have an impact on how people live their lives, perhaps, for example, in terms of crime or the way the activities they did?
Yeah, so I mean, one of the really obvious things which street lighting obviously meant was a kind of extension of the day. There's a great quote from the editor of Tatler writing in 1710 where he says, "The lighting of London has thrown business and pleasure into the hours of rest, and by that means made the natural night half as long as it should be." So there's these kinds of complaints which suggest that now walking around in the evenings, you needed to, well, be well-dressed. You needed to present yourself for the public face. And, of course, what that means is that the more wealthy classes or the bourgeoisie or the elites could safely walk around in the streets in the evening because of this street lighting. And so that was a great benefit to them, but it also kind of co-opted that part of the evening from the other classes for the wealthy. So there's a sort of strange transfer that happens there. And that's both on that very literal level, as in they can now walk around the street, but also perhaps there's an interesting example in Craig Kozlowski's book, Evening's Empire, where he describes now that the rich can walk out into the night and they can go out to parties and whatnot, their servants and their carriage drivers also have to work out into the evening and wait for them to finish their parties or whatever. So, again, it extends those days of work for the servant class in a different way, not just because they're not sort of as welcome in this evening.
Okay, that's really interesting, isn't it?
See
how just some form of like infrastructure, lighting, just completely changes lives in terms of how we live home life and work life as well. So yeah, it's really interesting to think now when with smart cities, this idea of more data availability and very much managing our streetlights and controlling when they're on and off and the kind of lamppost collecting data, to think about what sort of impact that will have on our lives. In your research, have you seen anything in particular about people's concerns about those areas?
One of the examples, it's not so much street lighting, but a few years ago here in London, there was a bit of an outcry over these smart bins. And these were rubbish bins, which, again, were scooping up information and kind of discreetly or without alerting themselves to what they're actually doing, picking up data from people's phones and using it for reasons that weren't transparent. So that's sort of one area where we've already seen it in action, although not with a lamppost but so much, but with a bin. And I guess there are sort of more distant promises in smart lighting, which I do get more excited about rather than more anxious about. I'm going to meet the Dutch designer Dan Rosegaard, who has been working with the State University of New York to really combine luciferin, which is a compound that's found in fireflies and jellyfish, which can light up, to combine that DNA with the DNA of trees, for instance. And they've got a working prototype, a tiny little plant, which will glow in the dark. So that's a kind of exciting potential breakthrough for street lighting, where instead of having individual lights on their own poles, we might simply be able to grow our street lights and have glowing trees down boulevards. You can imagine that there's a whole sort of romantic aspect to lighting as well, which changes the way people think about cities, they write about cities, and the experience of cities, and potentially something like this could really transform the way we understand public space and the kind of romance of the city, if you like.
So it's actually when we think to the future and we think about new technologies coming through in things like smart cities, that actually it's not always, things won't stay the same as they always were. We won't necessarily have street columns, but there's these new technologies which provide new, really interesting ways of lighting our cities. But it's nice that you pick up, actually it's not about how we use urban space, how citizens interact with their urban environment. And so I guess in designing smart cities, it's kind of design and involving citizens is crucial. Have you, from your experience, seen that previously smart cities was perhaps more a discipline of engineering and technology and design, architecture, people are getting more involved now? Do you see that?
Yeah, I think that's really a really good point. I mean, again, to come back to this question, who are these technologies for, I think, is something we really need to continually ask ourselves. And in some of the smart cities work that we've seen, it's big companies, IBM, Cisco, now increasingly Facebook, Google, are building cities with building technologies for cities with their interest in mind. And I think really we need to be, protective of that and cautious about what these companies are offering and to build in the needs of the citizen in there. the needs of public space and the needs of the individual. And the best way to do that is to work directly with communities to build up a kind of a knowledge within the public about what smart cities are for and how we can use them in a way that they encourage the best things about cities today.
Yeah, great. I think these companies set out with a good intentions. I mean, thinking back to the kind of smart street lighting, I can see a lot of benefits of being able to control your street lighting and maybe dim it at certain times and focus light when perhaps there's an accident or an incident on the streets. But it is thinking about people's concerns as well, about what data is being collected and how it impacts their lives. So it's very interesting that, as you say, actually the key to designing effective smart city initiatives is to work with people early on to help involve them in helping you to design the future kind of infrastructure for our cities, but also for lots of disciplines to work together so that people begin to understand how people use the kind of urban space.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think to come back to your original question, it's exactly that trajectory which you describe, one which starts with technologists, engineers, infrastructure specialists, and then increasingly includes designers, architects, perhaps even social scientists, and then even more so the public themselves can help to, co-create these systems. And I think that then points towards questions about, can we build an open platform or a system which people can contribute to and use as a sort of infrastructure in which to build their own systems on top of, or do these systems need to be proprietary and closed? And I think given that we're talking about public space and public data and really information that's derived from people embedded into the city, that looking towards a system, a smart system, which we can all kind of use together or co-create, will mean a much more democratic outcome for these types of technologies.
Yeah, it's interesting that you pick up on this idea of a kind of open innovation platform. So cities not getting tied into one supplier, but being able to work with lots of different, with their citizens, but also lots of different companies and organisations that might bring different ideas and approaches to how cities develop as smart cities. So you touched on some of the really interesting projects that you're working on. Do you have any future projects in particular coming up that in this area which might be of interest to our listeners?
Yeah, the next project that we're working on, which is still a little way off and we're just getting started on it, is, working title, Future Designs, a big exhibition about, the future, everything, design, cities, biotech, energy, entertainment, you name it. And of course, a big section of that is we'll be looking at smart cities. So at the moment, we're going to investigate various designers and companies and to see what they're working on at the moment. One of them who we've been in touch with is a guy called Carlo Ratti, who's working out of the MIT Sensible City Lab. And one of their projects, which has developed a few years ago now, around 2009, is called the Copenhagen Wheel, which is an electric bike wheel that can be attached to any existing bike. But it's also got a kind of social network that's part of the app which sits on your phone that goes along with this bike. So rather than just providing energy and helping you get up a hill, it also might alert you when you're cycling past a friend or when you're going to encounter another colleague or perhaps, I don't know, somebody to avoid, who knows. We're also seeing these types of smart technologies being embedded into bicycles. And then Kutsu Plus is a project we're looking at, which is in Helsinki. Again, this is kind of like Uber, but for public transport, for buses. So it's a development initiative being run by the government in Helsinki. And really, you can click your app wherever you are, and a bus service which doesn't have a defined route will kind of adapt its path to come and pick you up from any corner effectively. So again, we're seeing more technologies which I guess can be considered more generous or more publicly facing or giving citizens a bit more control than perhaps some of the more private initiatives that perhaps have been leading this sector so far. So they're the ones that we really get excited about.
Okay. I mean, they sound like very fun and engaging technologies as well. So very much, I guess, some of the more big kind of top-down, a more kind of a technology company-driven solutions, but these sound more kind of bottom-up and involving, I guess, both kind of technologists, but citizens and artists and kind of creating things which are fun as well as serving a purpose in the city. So that sounds really fascinating. So I think you mentioned an exhibition. So when will that be open to the public?
Yeah, so the exhibition will open in April 2017, so we're still a little way out. And, of course, being an exhibition about the future, we're trying to leave a few gaps in the objects and the things which we will show, objects or technologies which will kind of shape our experience of the future or which point towards the kind of future that we're building today. So, yeah, keep an eye out and come back and see us in a couple of years. Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, thanks very much, Rory. That's been really fascinating to hear about how you got involved in smart cities and all the different projects and organisations you're working with. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks very much for having me. Thank you.